Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything.
Hello again. This time it's my treat. I'm in Maggie's beautiful, magical room, full of many versions of the picture that I call the Tree of Life, that she doubtless calls something else entirely, and wonderful pictures of angels, and it all feels very peaceful and lovely in here. Hello, Maggie.
Hello. Well, that's lovely of you to say so. Thank you. It's a Kabbalistic Christian chapel and my office.
Ah, that explains it.
And they are the Tree of Life, but the Tree of Life is also replicated four times, which is Jacob's Ladder, which represents the four primary elements of fire, air, water and earth, and also represent Trinity, which the idea of Trinity being that if you have the dance of three rather than two opposing forces, the dance of three creates a fourth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and same in Celtic.
The Jacob's Ladder is representative of that. The physical world is the production, the end result of the dance of the three higher worlds.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So I'm glad you've gone straight in for some illumination on Christian teachings, or much more ancient, actually.
Yes, much more ancient.
Much more ancient than Christianity. Anyway, because I came here with a question flickering away on the tip of my tongue, which let's just get straight to. So I've been reflecting on that question since we last talked about it. Why are we friends? And I thought there's so much more to it than just an interest in our mutual interest in spirituality and just the bone knowing of another good woman when you're sitting in her company. But that one of the things that absolutely unites us, I think, is that we both have a very strong, a very gentle, a very compassionate desire to see the patriarchy, the structures of imperialism and capitalism fall, basically. And my question, and this really genuinely intrigues me, is I see that you can see how your religion and your flavour of Christianity is something that can help with that, whereas from my seat in the corner I'm like, whoa, that's such a backbone of it.
Yes.
And so I'd really love to know, Maggie, how can the practice of Christianity support the gentle, compassionate, but necessary unravelling of almost everything we think of as normal?
Well, I think it's like everything else, you've got to go back to the root. Because most of Christianity today is hideously patriarchal. Mm. And okay, we've got women priests. The only reason basically the Church of England is still going is because of the women priests. And a lot of them are non-stipendiary, which means they're doing it for free.
Yeah.
Which is actually part of the toxic feminine that we will do so much for free.
Yeah.
And I was just talking to you before we started recording, a dear parishioner of mine has died and I must go. Of course I must go. Absolutely I will go. And I will do everything I possibly can to be of what assistance can be done. But I'm non-stipendiary. I don't get paid for it.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm hoist with my own petard in that respect. But the roots, if we can go back to the roots, and we have to, because I'm going to re-quote J.K. Chesterton here, which is that Christianity has not been tried and found wanting. It's been found difficult and not been tried at all.
Yeah.
But the root of Christianity, we start off with a kind man who loved women and thought women and slaves and Roman centurions were all valid, equally relevant people with hopes, dreams, desires, and all deserving of healing. Mm. And we have this story of death and resurrection, and remind me, must go to Babylon. Mm-hmm. Must go back to Babylon in a minute. This story of death and resurrection, which is witnessed by the woman, and understood only by the women. When the men go herring off terrified, the women stay. The women are prepared to embalm. The women were prepared to wait. They don't build cairns. They don't go on marches. They don't shout. And we nowadays tend to think that that expresses weakness. You know, you've got to fight the patriarchy, but you can't, because the patriarchy is the fighting.
Indeed, exactly. You're being it if you're fighting it.
Absolutely. And we've now got a world where women think it's okay to be on the front line in the army killing people. Now, of course, you want to be equal, but why does it have to involve death? And I was down with staying with our friend Adam, who is our most frequently mentioned.
The listener
went down to Aylesbury to pick him up, to bring him back up here to recuperate, because he's had severe health issues. And I've lost my thread because I was talking to you about that. Oh,
so women up there to go backwards. We've got women waiting upon the Jesus who is dead.
Yes.
Women not running.
Yes. Nope, can't remember it. I'm sure it'll come back. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, we'll come back to that probably. But it's the idea of the toxic feminine supporting the toxic masculine, which we have in Christianity. And actually, we've got to learn to rest, to settle, to allow, to re-nurture. And this isn't the point I was going to make, but it's a point that comes up from it, is that Adam very kindly got a delivery from Waitrose to support us with the food that he's going to be needing. And it arrived, and even though they've got recyclable bags, I was horrified by the amount of plastic and all the things that I won't buy from the supermarket anymore. And I'm not as good as you at these kind of things. But I was just sort of thinking, we are supporting this more, and it doesn't matter culture. More and more nowadays. And the going back to the Christianity thing is that the women were incredibly powerful in those days in a hidden kind of way. And one of the things that people go on about is that, oh, these gospels were taken away from us. They were removed from us, and they were censored. And all this anger comes up. And again, anger is not going to help it.
Yep.
Really not going to help it. And I believe, and I may be wrong, but it's where I'm coming from, that an awful lot of the feminine stuff is hidden rightly, because it is so powerful. And we go back to that injunction against astrology that we saw in the Hebrew text. Well, I've come across a few people in the last few weeks who are practicing astrology in a very dangerous way.
Okay.
You know, because they haven't got that much knowledge, but they're throwing it out. And all these things, all these sacred arts and languages and sciences need to be observed with huge discernment and discipline and strength. And that discernment, discipline and strength, according to the Tree of Life, which is Christian Judaic mysticism, is the feminine. It's the power of no.
Okay.
Masculine is yes, or yes please, and the feminine is thank you, and yeah. And now what you need is the two together.
Yeah.
But when you do the no, you're actually tipping it over into the fight. You know, so the answer, and why is this relevant for Christianity? Because that's what Jesus taught, that's what he lived. That's how he was, and that's how they lived in the early ages, before Rome, when Christianity was, before it was even persecuted, when it was of no account whatsoever. You tell things are starting to be of some account when they start being persecuted.
Indeed.
And they build up. They lived in community. They shared everything. Now, I would find it quite hard to live in a community, I'm quite sure, but the concept is where we need to be. Shared land, shared work, shared everything. Yeah, and this receptive aspect, which is what I've always taught in the prosperity consciousness aspect of my work, is the Jesus thing of ask, believing, and it is given. And the story of Hannah in the Old Testament is the most perfect prosperity story. If you take it literally, she's asking for a baby because she's infertile. And her husband has another wife who's fertile, who is an absolute bully to Hannah, which you can see. I mean, the Old Testament is basically EastEnders. People love EastEnders and shout about the Old Testament, but there's no difference.
Right.
Really no difference. Apart from a few more deaths, but...
Didn't comment, never watched EastEnders, but equally I haven't read the Bible either.
But Hannah is upset and that she is persecuted, and in those days a woman's value was based on children. But if we look at this allegorically, basically Hannah has not found herself. She hasn't found her balance, she hasn't found her purpose. In her case, being a mother is a purpose, and that's fair enough. Why wouldn't it be? So she goes to the temple and prays and prays and prays and says, if you will give me a child, I will be so grateful and he will be your child. So he comes back to you. And she's not actually saying, if you give me a child, I'll give him back to you. It's actually, can we have a child that is your child? Can you see the difference in that?
I do see the difference in that, but I'm also intrigued because... is there a world in which every child isn't God/goddess's child?
No, but sometimes you have to ask. Sometimes you actually, it's the ask, believing, and you will receive. So she asks and believes, and she goes home in total peace of mind because she's laid her problem down at the temple. And that's the divine feminine, is asking and understanding, trusting, believing, holding that beautiful energy that it is okay. Yeah. No matter how bad it looks, it's okay. And you're not doing nothing, you're praying.
Yeah.
And you're holding your energy well. And that's exactly the same story as the crucifixion. Is that it's about the women afterwards, how no matter how they were grieving and how terrible it was, they stood there and said, okay, we wait. We know what we want. We wait.
So in both
we
of
look
these,
for the good in this.
Yeah, but also they're standing in the trust.
Yes.
In both of those stories, they're completely standing in the trust of the knowing.
Yes.
That the divine, so different story from your seat or mine, but the trust of the knowing that the divine is paying attention and has got this.
Yes.
And that whatever that turns out to be will be the right thing, because this is a story of connection, of consciousness, of prayerfulness, of people paying attention. And so when those things are in place, as this feels very similar to what you're saying with the pray, knowing, believing that you will be given what you pray for.
Yeah.
When you pray in connection and you are totally in the surrender of,
yes,
in a way, my will be that, thy will be my will. That our ancient prayer, I don't have any idea where it comes from.
Yes.
But and that if you're in that, then the outcome's going to be the right outcome.
Yes, it probably won't be the outcome that you were wanting.
But it might be.
But it might be.
Yeah.
It will be the outcome that you need. And I've got a story just from this morning, and it's very personal, so forgive me, I'll probably get into tears about it, but we've been going through a lot of grief through losing two dogs, and also been very worried about Adam, who is very dear to us. And because of that, usually grief, I find, hasn't affected prosperity, but this time, with all sorts of things, it has, and certain payments that come through haven't. They shouldn't have done, should have done, but they haven't. And therefore, this month, I'm a little bit broke.
Skint.
And I had to hire a car to go and fetch Adam because we needed to bring so much of his stuff back so he could build a home here for the recovery process. So it had to be a big car with a state car, that kind of thing, and do a lot of carrying and all that kind of thing. And when I hired the car, for some reason, my credit card for the £250 deposit on top of the payment of the car,
thing you get back.
Yeah, wouldn't work, so I'd use my debit card. And they said to me, it's only a precaution and we don't actually take the money. Well, they did. Which wiped me out financially, and I've got bills to pay.
Yeah.
And I just got this intuition that said, and I bet it'll take 3 working days to pay back when I return the car, which I did today. And I woke up this morning and went into a tailspin, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning, as you do. And I was thinking, come on, come on, come on. It's always all right. It's always all right. What you need to do is get up, go into meditation, go into the feminine, go into the receptiveness and lay your issue on the table and say, this is how it is. Please help. And I know you will. So I did. And the phone rang. So I curtailed my meditation, went and answered the phone, and it was my lady friend from the Methodists about one of them who has died suddenly, and they desperately need my help because it's a tragedy. Mm. Now, I'm a non-stipendiary minister, which means I don't get paid, which means I have to go. Of course I want to go. I want to be all the help I possibly can, but I'm not going to be paid. So I actually went, what the fuck? To God. What the actual? And burst into tears, at which point Adam potters out of his room and says, what is it? And I said, oh, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm up to here. I've dreamed away all 3. I've done it. And he just said, how much do you need?
Yeah.
And transferred £500. Now it's a loan, but that's all I needed.
Yeah.
But I would never have asked him if that phone call hadn't come through and been the final straw.
Yeah. And so there it is. You trusted, you prayed, you trusted, and ta-da, there's...
And I swore at God, like the good Jewish way that one is meant to do.
Oh, are you?
God, yes, one of the lovely things I like about Judaism is that you're encouraged to shout at God. You're actually allowed to be in relationship. And that's another thing that Jesus tried to remind us of, is that we are children of the Creator in relationship with the Creator. We don't need priests.
Yeah.
We don't need any kind of priest, and all good priests should teach you that exactly how to do it. I always say to people who do courses with me that the happiest day of my life where they're concerned is to watch them go past me and know more than I do, you know, and that's such an honour that you were part of that process for them to learn.
And that's another thing that intrigued me. Sorry, just to derail my own question a moment. But
please do. I'm going to blow my nose now, ladies and gentlemen. Excuse me.
Is that there's one of the things that's so extraordinary about you is how much you know. You have so much knowledge, information.
I just read the books.
Well, exactly. But how much does that matter? You know. You see what I'm asking, you know, you want them to overtake you in knowledge, but really, or does knowledge matter, or is it...
No, but I always want them to know that they're free. Mm. You know, I'm not trying to keep them under some kind of thrall to me as their teacher. I want them to pick up whatever they can learn from me that is valid for them and then move on. And I always say to people, if they come to a workshop or something and decide that what I teach is not what they want, that's really valuable.
Yeah.
They don't have to waste any more time on it.
Yeah.
So great, good. Hand over your lolly and move on. You know?
And the
feminine is the receiving of intuition in both men and women in our tradition. And it's the sitting and listening. The other night in my dark bath, because as you know, I have a bath in the dark at night. And I was thinking about this course I'm doing. I'm doing a paid for course on reclaiming the divine feminine. And it's wonderful because it's challenging me. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be doing it if we weren't be doing these courses with you. But I just thought, no, I actually want to do something that pulls together Judaism, Christianity and these other things that would be exactly what you were asking about, healing. Because you've got to pull out the sword that hurt you in the first place. You do have to go back to the root of the problem. And I was thinking, oh, I do need to know a little bit more about so-and-so. And within, almost simultaneously of that thought, I was reminded of a book I've got.
Right.
Karen Armstrong's The History of God, which is quite a difficult read. But I just got out of the bath, went to it and opened it and went, this is exactly what I need for the next stage. And then I'll move on to Joseph Campbell just to refuel myself. So the answer's nearly always there if you can get into the feminine. And Jesus's healing was, he didn't go, abracadabra, blah, abracadabra, you are now healed. He just went to the person and said, are you willing? And saw them perfect. And in his auric field, or whatever you want to call it, they couldn't be anything but perfect. You know, and that is actually the huge strength of the divine feminine, which is holding. And Mary held these things in her heart. It says that in the gospel. You know, she didn't go out and talk to everybody or complain. She just held them in her heart. I am going to have a baby, and this is a divine being. She held it in her heart. It's the holding of the pain and the processing of it and the working through it so that there is a resolution that does not involve violence.
Yeah. Okay. So to summarise, if what I think you've said, which might not be what you've said at all, that if Christianity is going to help dismantle the patriarchy, for example, and toxicity and general kind of imperialism, etc., what needs to happen is it needs to go back to where it came from,
yes,
and to find its own balance so that it is talking as or being as equally about the receptive, the quiet no,
yes.
The
it needs to. We've started the Salt Space Contemplative Meditations on Tuesdays in South Seal again, first time this week, and it was just David and myself. But you hold the space, you form the eye of the storm, and that's what the feminine is for, is to be the still, calm centre in the eye of the storm, the place of refuge. And Adam's friend Polly and I were both able to hold that eye of the storm for him, and his friend Ali as well, three girls, all fully focused in the feminine to be there. I will carry you.
Wonderful. Yeah, I mean, that I would, my answer to the question would be really, really similar, that this is what we need. This is what it feels like humans need more than anything else right now, is to find our no, but to find it in the place of utter, utter gentleness.
Yes.
And that serene certainty,
yes,
of what we are and of what we are not, and yes, of what we are connected to. So yes, for me, it would be that utter serenity that comes from my full knowing and acceptance that I am indivisibly interwoven with all of the rest of life, and that therefore, if I am to continue, and if I want, you know, my children, and hopefully one day I'll have grandchildren, to continue, then I must say no to the destructive forces that are trying to, well, succeeding in threatening the web of life upon which I depend and upon which we all depend. But that it can't be, you know, marchy archy.
No, that may be a first step, because when you are rebelling, you're going to feel angry. And that will give you an energy, a force for change, which is very, very good. But once it goes into the rage and the blame.
Yeah. Yes, then, exactly. Yeah.
Then we have a problem, because you're into the toxic feminine with blame, not the healed feminine.
I'd love to speak a lot more about that, but suspect that...
No, we've got another good 5 minutes.
Oh, okay, jolly good. So, yes. Oh, 5 minutes won't cut it. So
no,
I'm
we'll do it
again.
Ignore that
question for a minute.
Yeah.
And we'll talk
Let
about
me talk
that
about
next
Babylon.
Time. Okay, talk about Babylon.
Yes, if I may, just go back. Because I was reading Karen Armstrong again, and I'd forgotten something. You know how, quite validly, pagans talk about Christianity stealing solstice and Lord of Misrule and all the old things. They're Babylonian. They're not. They're Babylonian. They're that old. I didn't know that. Isn't that fascinating? But way back in the time of Babylon, at the time of their new year in April, they used to humiliate the king, set up a Lord of Misrule, chaos, and then at the end of the 11, 12 days, the king was reinstated. So that is death, chaos, and resurrection.
Yeah.
So I just adore the fact that it's the same pattern. All the way through, it's exactly the same pattern.
Well, yeah, I mean, that for me, that's the point. That's why I always say, well, yes, but, you know, and why I can't stand in support of the idea that anyone stole anything, because it is how it is.
Yes.
You know, how can you be talking about being in communion with any sort of divine if you can't see that there is a life, death, life cycle?
Yes.
And so, you know, it's not, you're not taking it from someone else. You're honouring the fact that it is.
Yes, it's the perennial tradition. It will form itself somehow.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
And the dance will continue with or without us.
Indeed.
And
having said that, I do think they nick some of our better names and dates and possibly things. But I mean,
but temporarily, this is a 2,000-year-old religion. It will probably be superseded by something else, which will nick it.
Yeah.
Nick the best bits from it. Well, as you say, it's not stealing. It's just that the perennial will always flow all the way through. And I think one of the things that's become very important, this was from Richard Rohr's daily emails, which I adore, cac.org, if you want to go and sign up for them. They're free. They are amazing. He was talking last week about my story, our story, and the story. And none of them are more important than the other.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same with the circles, the sephirot on the tree of life. None of them is more important than the other. Every one has to be in balance for the psyche to be in balance, for the universe to be in balance.
Mm.
And there was a moment where I was talking to Adam about the delivery and the amount of plastic in it, which was concerning me. And he said, at this moment, I am more important. And I could understand that, absolutely, because he's been very sick and he needs an awful lot of things. But I don't agree.
No, I don't either.
I really don't agree. I don't think asking me to pick up some fresh organic produce on my way up to Aylesbury that he could eat from the organic shop would have been out of the question. Now, I'm not blaming him because he lives on his own. He was in need.
Mm.
But even so, he isn't more important than the planet, the story. And the difficulty we have is that with the toxic feminine is that we go from my story, which is they done me wrong, and we join up with other people that they done wrong to whom they have done wrong, I beg your pardon, and we make it our story, and we make the wrongness and the blame bigger and bigger and bigger, and that becomes the woundology, which we've talked about before.
Mm.
So we have got a very, very big task in helping the world to reweave. We really have, because we are programmed now into more and more and more. Oh, yes, I've remembered the point. I remember the point.
Okay.
The point was I was at Adam's on a Sunday night, and he's been watching Death in Paradise, which is a TV show about a detective in the Caribbean who solves murders. And just like Midsummer, there's more murders on that island you can shake a stick at. And I said, I won't watch murder on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. I have one day a week where I won't watch anything that might involve violence. And he was totally supportive of it and interesting, but he hadn't thought of it. And this is a Jewish man who observes Sabbath. And we've mentioned this before, this idea that we get entertained. And I do, I am guilty of this, be entertained by watching violence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's toxic.
Yeah, it's horrible. I'm afraid I don't find violence entertaining, even a tiny bit. But yeah, I understand that people do.
Mm.
And yeah. So, blah, blah. So I just want to go back quickly to my story, our story, the story. And that is that for me, it's the idea that my story, our story, and the story could be in any way separate that is responsible for the madness of everything from bloody all the plastic in the order.
Abso-freaking-lutely.
Yeah.
They're a trinity.
Indeed.
And when my story is toxic, it affects the other two stories. And when the story is told in a toxic way, which Christianity is, which much of Islam is, which some of Judaism is, and many religions are told, the story is told in a way that's toxic. It infuses everything.
Totally.
But you've just got to start somewhere.
Indeed. Yes. Yes, this is an ongoing conversation that I have, I mean, in particular with my sons, actually, that for me, the point of power, the place we can start, is with ourselves.
Ooh.
And that therefore, my story and my relationship, for example, to, you know, the plastic that I have the power to buy or not buy, is the place where I truly have power. And what they're saying is, you know, you can't save the world one plastic carton at a time, Mum. And yes, I see that. And of course, the story must change. But the story will never change unless I am prepared to change my story.
Exactly.
Because I can't sit here going to, you know, the chairman of ICI, what the hell do you think you're doing, if I'm sat there buying his stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. And then, but now it's not always so simple. Now, let's discuss smoked salmon in closing.
Okay. I'm very willing to discuss smoked salmon.
So I love smoked salmon. I do like smoked salmon. And I won't buy anything but wild salmon.
Okay.
Because I don't like salmon farming. So there I have a complete conundrum in that I have got to, if I'm going to get wild salmon, it's got to be Alaskan salmon.
Right.
Which means that I'm contributing to the carbon footprint of the world by trying to save the salmon.
Okay.
Do you have any help on that one?
Don't
eat the smoked salmon. I'm going to have to get there, aren't I?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can see that, and I will own it. And I'm not there yet. So if you're listening and thinking, yeah, but I can't do without my this, that, and the other.
No, you so can.
Well, yeah, you so can. But you can also take steps towards.
Yes.
And even though I agree and own the fact that I'm contributing to the carbon footprint by having wild elastic salmon, I will not.
Wild elastic salmon.
Boing, boing, boing. I will not eat farmed.
Yeah, good.
So it's a step. And I think that's another thing about the feminine, which is so important, is to take the baby steps.
Well, and actually also to recognise that we are, you know, you are one woman, I am one woman. We can do what we can do, and we can't do all of it all of the time.
No.
And that's a massive part of the gentle no.
Yes.
Is understanding that we are not single-handedly responsible for all of it.
No.
And that where we feel we have power, yes, it's up to us to act with power.
Yes.
And that's different for each of us. We
yes.
all have our, you know, place where we really can go for it, and places where we're just going to bluff.
Mm.
And so let's be in the gentle no and the receptive nurturing of, well, you know, I'm doing what I can and I'm doing my best, and my
yes.
best might be very much better on any given Tuesday than it was on you know, last week's scrappy old Friday or whatever.
Yeah.
But that as long as we are in the place of utterly authentically trying our best, then we're doing our bit.
Yes.
And it's only if that has dropped into toxic anything, where we're just absolutely being, you know, liars to ourselves, and we're not trying our best at all, then, you
yeah.
know, you can be, there's this whole conversation, isn't there, around allyship.
Yes.
And you can be a bullshit ally to the planet, as well as you can be a
yes.
bullshit ally to anything.
Yes.
And let's not be that.
Yes.
Let's just try our best.
Let's just try our best. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you again next week.